Hey there, I wanted to thank all of you for listening and for the consistent downloads. I'm seeing a steady download cycle that appears to be growing, at least in a steady and comprehensive fashion. If I can ask a single favor of all of you, and it's not asking for money, don't worry, just that you make sure that you go to your platform of choice and leave me a review or a rating. And if everyone that is listening just on Spotify alone did that, it would have a surprising effect on the exposure ratios of this show. I realize that I'm the only one that can see my own subscriber count for now, but this is going to grow into something great because of all of you. I've started making professional-grade promos for social media, attempting to bring people back here, but man, that's a lot of work for a one-man riot. But I hope you've heard them, I hope you've seen them, and I hope you enjoy them. Thank you again, and please tell your friends about me as well. And if you hate my show, send it to your enemies, okay? Thanks. Peace out. Did you ever wonder where certain phrases come from? In this mini extra episode of Box Number 7, I wanted to cover three examples that I find fascinating, and all three came to relief this week. Okay, number one, we all know what we mean when we say that someone was quote-unquote blackballed, either from an organization, a movement, a reputational rating, or even political office. And if you were simply to say being blackballed is essentially an expulsion, you'd be right. That's typically what all of us mean when we say they were quote-unquote blackballed. The phrase, however, is Masonic in origin, and I'd like to thank Vespers Lodge number 84 in Red Bluff for clarifying it with a visual look at the implements. I was there to do a performance recently, and they were very kind and gracious to me. If a member of a Blue Lodge is found themselves in the uncomfortable position of having their membership imperiled, reasons can vary, but they're usually expressly clear, the member can be subjected to a vote. The voting members have possession of a white ball and a black ball. So a vote is taken anonymously, usually with the lights off, and each member drops a ball into a communal area like a bowl, white meaning to remain and black meaning to expel. So if a single black ball is seen to have been dropped into the group, then an expulsion is rendered after the lights are turned on. Thus, they have been blackballed. Okay, next one. You don't have a clue. So the word clue, C-L-U-E, is a variant of an old spelling, C-L-E-W, a word not common till at least the 17th century. The word is commonly meant to mean a fact or an idea that leads to the solution of a problem or a scenario or a mystery. But the word is from the Old English clewin or clowin, meaning a ball formed by winding yarn, twine, or thread. And it is still one of the remaining meanings of the word clue even to this day. It's of Germanic origin and is related to Dutch kluwen and the German knowel or something of that sort. I'm not really great. Knowel, possibly. Both forms of clue and clue were used to refer to the ball of thread employed as the means of threading a way through a labyrinth or a maze in various mythological or legendary narratives, the best known of that of being of Theseus. Now, if you may remember this story in Greek mythology, the Minotaur was a half-man, half-bull aberration, the offspring of Pasiphae and a bull. I won't get deep into that, but there's a Genesis 6 crossover here, and the Minotaur was confined like a prisoner in Crete in the infamous labyrinth, the beast being fed annually with 7 virgins and 7 young men from Athens. There's a lot of weird crossover here, sacrificing of, anyway, it's crazy, the parallels. Theseus set himself the task of killing the Minotaur with the help of Ariadne and the daughter of Minos and Pasiphae. Well, she handed him a ball of thread, which he unraveled as he went in and used it to trace his way out again after slaying the Minotaur. So, in effect, she gave him a clue. Number 3. Drop me a line. Now, this one came about because I was engaged in a little bit of what I might call personal and unachievable fantasia with ephemeral objects. In other words, I was looking at signed Mark Twain artifacts on eBay, realizing I can't afford them. I came across this signed letter that was inscribed with the short form version of Samuel L. Clemens, actually signed SLC, which coincidentally is also the initials for Salt Lake City, an area that Mark Twain traveled through and chronicled in his writings in a book called Roughing It. Anyway, there was a single page letter on eBay, by the way, it's still up there, and $5,000 if you want to buy it for me and contribute to the show. And a general overall sense of personal morale and encouragement. I'm just kidding. Anyway, the letter. Anyway, back to the letter. It's endearing. An endearing letter, because Twain happened to be in Sweden at the time he wrote it, and he was in search of these osteopathic treatments for his daughter's epilepsy. In the middle of this, he wrote a letter to a local bookseller looking for the Clark Russell Sea Tales. So he was looking for written material to pass the time while he was in search of these osteopathic remedies. I was reading the letter with my usual fascination that I have for Mark Twain ephemeral things, and I saw the sentence in there, and he had written this about his other daughter. If you haven't heard from Clara when this reaches you, please drop her a line. Drop her a line? It sounded too contemporary to be in an 1899 letter. It sounded too colloquial, too idiomatic for the day. It made me think the letter was a fraud, actually, for a minute, but I started to look into it, and I went to Mr. Google, and as it turns out, Drop Me a Line hails back to early 19th century. This letter was written right on the edge of the 20th. So Twain was not only relevant, he was on the cutting edge of his own language, which he always seemed to be. So there you have it. If you like this little miniature episode, drop me a line. The next one will probably not be out until Monday, but we will be talking about the enigmatically complicated and far more complex than you realize, Sir Isaac Newton. And this is box number 7.